The reading for this Sunday morning is an excerpt from the article by James J. Pathak and David Runyon. It's simply entitled, The Art of Neighboring, Building Genuine Relationship Right Outside Your Door. The article starts. In our culture, we have a fascination with celebrities and talent. We are riveted by movies about extraordinary people doing extraordinary things because we want to be inspired. We want to be wowed by the lives of others. So imagine watching a movie about a man who goes to work every day, has dinner with his family 5 nights a week, and also reads books to his kids before they go to bed at night. He's also a great neighbor. He makes time to invite his neighbors over for a meal a few times a month. Instead of watching football games by himself, he watches them with people who live around him. He lets his neighbors borrow his tools and helps them work on their cars. Occasionally, he grabs a drink with a few of his neighbors and they talk about their jobs and what they think their kids will grow up to be. When one of his neighbors is going through a hard time, he is available. When a neighbor needs him to watch her kids because something unexpected came up, he is always willing. Imagine a scene after scene of this film, and we watch a man who is consistently faithful to love those who live nearest to him. This would be a terribly boring movie. No one would pay to see it. The movies that we watch tell us a lot about what we value in our culture. We do value consistency. On the whole, we are convinced that we need to make a big splash to make a difference. Just being a good neighbor is not that big a deal. The simple truth can change everything. Small things matter. They really do. It does not take a superhero to be a great neighbor. We all wish we were a bit more of something, smarter or funnier or wealthier. Often we have a hard time recognizing what we do have to offer. When it comes to neighboring, it's important to figure out how we might make a difference in the lives of our neighbors. It may not seem that we have much, but when we give from what we have, then something very sacred happens.
You know, there are all kinds of interesting people that live right around your neighborhood, like, oh, the postman and the policeman.
Hey, did you order these groceries here?
Oh, hi there. Yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
Yeah, these are your groceries.
Have you got everything I ordered?
No.
How about the parsley?
No, we didn't have the parsley.
Oh, you didn't have the parsley.
No, we brought some other stuff instead, though.
What'd you bring instead?
Well, let's see. I brought some Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts.
Yes, and
I got
some turnip greens.
Turnip greens,
I got some kale.
Kale?
Yes, we were having a big sale on kale.
Oh, a big kale sale.
You've heard about it.
I've heard about it.
Yes, indeed. Well, I brought you a lot of that.
Hey, listen, I was just talking about some of the people that lived around our neighborhood. And,
you were?
Yeah.
What'd
as
you say?
Long as you look sort of like, a grocer, one of those people around the neighborhood, why don't we do that song about the people in your neighborhood?
Well, I'd rather not, actually.
Oh, come on. It's a nice song.
Well, okay, but you start off.
All right, I'll start off. Well, now, who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? Say, who are the people in your neighborhood? The people that you meet each day. As long as you look like the grocer, why don't you tell us what a grocer does?
Okay.
All right?
Oh, a grocer sells the things you eat, like cereal and cheese and meat. Whatever food you're looking for, you're sure to find it in my store.
Because the grocer is a person in your neighborhood.
In your neighborhood.
He's in your neighborhood.
The grocer is a person in your neighborhood. A person that you meet each day.
Well, nice to see you. Oh, I know who you are.
Yeah, hi, Bob.
You're the doctor, right?
Yeah. Oh, a doctor works the whole day long to keep you feeling well and strong. But if by chance you're feeling sick, I'll try to make you well real quick.
Because a doctor is a person in your neighborhood.
In your neighborhood.
He's in your neighborhood.
And a grocer is a person in your neighborhood.
You tell him, grocer. The people that you meet
when you're walking down the street, they're the people that you meet each day.
Always very holy texts that we come up with, this our church. So the past couple of years, I've taken up a practice where I listen to podcasts while I run. It's a really interesting practice because later when I'm back in this spot, I have a flash, like an association that I didn't know my brain had made of the podcast that I listened to when I was last in that same spot. So, which means, like, for example, that the relatively isolated trail of the Environmental Learning Center, you know that trail that goes back around there? Well, it's forever going to remind me of some of the spookiest parts of the podcast Serial, which is about a murder investigation. So there are pros and cons to this practice. Lately, I've been listening to the podcast from Krista Tippett, from her program On Being. Tippett will be the featured speaker at next year's General Assembly, and in my opinion, she's up there with Terry Gross and Bill Moyer as one of the world's greatest interviewers. One of her interviews is so good, I've listened to it at least 3 times, so lots of my trails remind me of it. It is the one from Sister Simone Campbell, who is perhaps maybe best well known as one of the nuns on the bus that traveled the country calling attention to economic injustice and immigration reform. It's relatively late in the interview when Tippett asks Sister Simone why she believes that Americans aren't able to respond to some of the most challenging problems that are going on in our country. Tippett says she doesn't think that it's Americans, that Americans don't care. She thinks that we really do care, it's just that we don't know what to do with all that care, how to put it into action. And in response, Sister Simone says this: I sometimes think we, in the United States, think we ought to do something about everything, and that it's my job to fix everything. Well, it's not. That's way beyond us. It's more important, I think, that we listen deeply to our stories and then see where that leads. If we all do our part, she says, whatever our part is, just that one thing, community is just about doing my part. When I heard this, I stopped running, hit pause, and then rewind and heard her say it again. And then I returned to running, this time nodding like, yeah, exactly. Just like running. Her simple analysis resonated with me deeply for 2 reasons. First, it struck me as like such a relief. It was one of those statements that feels simultaneously like the best piece of good news, completely revolutionary, but that is also old news, something we already know and believe and just need to hear aloud. I mean, we know we cannot do everything. I mean, it isn't our job to fix everything. Yet somehow there's something in us that forgets and tries anyway. Sister Simone calls the journey of faith a journey of walking toward trouble. But she reminds us we cannot walk toward every trouble. We have to figure out first where, which trouble we are meant to walk towards, which of all the possible paths are our path. And to do this, she says, we have to start with listening. Listening to our own stories, and then to the stories of those that live in our community. Listen with an open and accepting heart, no matter what those stories may be. And when we really let ourselves hear these stories, take them in, and even let ourselves be changed by these stories, then, and only then, will we really know where and how to act, what trouble to walk towards. Because these stories literally propel us forward. Listening like this allows us to act from what Parker Palmer would call a heart that has been broken open. Not shattered, but rather broken open. This is where simply getting to know someone becomes a spiritual practice. And where listening, just listening, becomes an act of justice making. Which brings me to the second reason this statement in her interview struck me. And let me just start by acknowledging that I blame my father for this one. According to family lore, when I was a baby, my dad was often too tired to wake up for his early morning shift with me. And so his creative solution was to helpfully place me in an infant seat, tilted up in front of the television, and then turn on the television, and then go back to bed. Now, this was before DVR or Netflix, let alone a video cassette recorder, and so I was stuck with whatever was on. And luckily for both of us, in one of those 12 or so channels that were available in 1976, the sixth season of Sesame Street was a constant program. And apparently this suited me just fine. As the lore also goes, I watched with rapt attention. And my dad, he's so lucky. He was able to catch a couple extra hours of sleep on a regular basis. Now, by that point in the show's run, Bob McGrath, the teacher who was singing there, he's a music teacher. He lives on Sesame Street. He'd sung that song, The People in Your Neighborhood, on at least 5 different episodes, over the course of which such neighbors as a postman, a fireman, a garbage man, a barber, a news dealer, teachers, a librarian, and a plumber had all been featured. Now, guess which one of those were female Muppets, by the way. All right, let me do it again. Postman, fireman, garbage man, barber, news dealer, teachers, librarian, and a plumber had all been featured. Not so much the plumber. Actually, 1976, when my little infant brain was absorbing all kinds of subconscious messages, that was the first time that someone other than Bob was featured singing that song. Maria Figueroa, the Puerto Rican young adult who eventually became a repair person in the Fix-It shop, offered her rendition, likely about the same time my dad was plopping me in front of the TV. So I suppose a lot of things might be blamed on my father. But for the purposes of today's sermon, and the second reason Sister Simone's statement really got to me, my father is responsible for my strong orientation to what I call the local, which is the orientation that Sister Simone is encouraging in her statement. Start where you are, in the everyday, with the people that you meet when you're walking down the street. Who knew so much power was contained in a little song about getting to know your neighbors? In truth, my dad's influence on me as a localist went far beyond Sesame Street. Even more important was the way my dad has lived his life. As an architect, he's always attuned to the layout of neighborhoods and housing, schools and shopping complexes. Growing up, he would often point out to my sisters and I how the shape of a given building or the landscape around it was influencing the people who were around there. My dad was also very active in the local business association, always trying to revitalize the local downtown and our waterfront. And I swear he was at every Kiwanis meeting and church planning meeting. And in all of these, he kept an eye on just simply building that sense of community across our whole town. In our actual neighborhood, both my parents knew well all of our surrounding neighbors. They took care of the older ones, sent us to play with the younger ones, got their mail and watered their lawn and took care of their pets when they were out of town and caught up regularly on front porches and back lawns on all the latest news. In many ways, my dad has lived his life as the epitome of that boring movie that consists of simple and small acts of just being a good neighbor. And as our reading says, there was something sacred about this simple neighborly orientation. And just over a year ago, we moved into our new home, and our next door neighbor greeted us with a plate of cookies, and he introduced himself. He said he went to the Timberline Church, and we braced ourselves a little. I remember I was wearing my running clothes that day, and as he asked me what I did for a living, I said I was a minister. He managed at least 3 double takes in 5 seconds. So after that awkward moment, he said he wanted to tell us about some things he had observed about our home and things we should be aware of. He also told us some stuff that he'd observed in the other nearby neighbors. And when he left, I think I said something like, well, I guess we've met the neighborhood gossip. But why did I say that? I mean, because he was paying attention to his neighbors, because he gave us advice, because he greeted us, because he came in like it was regular and expected. The stuff he'd observed about our house was genuinely helpful. And double takes notwithstanding, he generally seemed to be fine with these nice lesbians and their 2 kids moving in next door. Even wanting to get to know us a little. I mean, isn't this what we used to call being neighborly? Now, I'm always skeptical of locating the simpler days in the past. I always find that times always have their challenges. But I have to believe that making real connections with the people who literally live in your neighborhood is less common today than it has been in the past. Bigger and more temperature-controlled homes make us more inclined to stay indoors when we are at home. And longer work or hours and increased extracurricular activities mean we aren't actually home all that often. And as last Sunday's message explored, we are getting more and more accustomed to talking only to those people who we know agree with us, who can affirm that story we already have in our heads, the judgments we've made about how the world should work. And when it comes to your neighbors, I mean, there's no guarantee that they agree with our preconceived ideas. They're just people. So getting to know them could be uncomfortable. How many of you talk to your neighbors regularly? Oh yeah, I love that. I kind of wondered about Fort Collins. There's something about Fort Collins. So I wonder if you talk to them about something other than the Broncos or the Rams or the weather. Yeah. Do you remember their names? Yeah, pretty good. Their stories. Yeah. Do you know when something happens in their life? Yeah, it's beautiful. Do you think of them as somebody that you would turn to? And do they think the same of you? Maybe you think of yourself as somebody they could turn to, but do they know that about you? At a personal level, I wonder what it would mean for us to seriously step up our game in being a good neighbor, both with our literal neighbors, but also our neighbors all across northern Colorado. Returning to Sister Simone, I just want to remind us that's not about doing everything we could do for all our neighbors, but simply doing our part. And to figure out that part, we consider just whose story we need to hear. What stories we have already heard. Those stories that are breaking our hearts wide open and propelling us to act in small or maybe big ways. Not news stories or Facebook comments. Personal stories of real relationship that are seeping into your soul, inviting you to grow and change in the everyday. Maybe it's a story you heard from a coworker or one of your friends, or a journey that you are on with a parent or your children. Something you are aware of in your own heart or in a friend's. Where in your real life, everyday community is your heart breaking wide open? And then what small act of response does that encourage? Where does the story lead? This is your part. In small and maybe big ways, this is your own personal trouble to walk towards. And as you're walking towards that trouble, you might appreciate some company. So I want to recommend to you the good folks on either side of you, in front and behind. They make for good company. More than just a collection of individual neighborly acts, it makes sense for us to think of ourselves, our whole congregation, as a good neighbor. And to use this idea of neighboring as a way to help us know where and how we are called to act. As a local congregation situated in a particular community, a particular time and place, we have a unique opportunity to have a significant impact on and relationship with this particular community, our neighbors. And we can learn what impact and relationship is uniquely ours to have through the same kind of listening. This is exactly what has happened in this past year in our ministry to address homelessness. For the past few years, as a part of our Faith Family Hospitality, hosting of homeless families, we've been convening reflection circles where we share stories about the experience, about how greeting, meeting, and hosting families has impacted us. And in these circles, through these circles, we realized it kept coming up this persistent desire to address homelessness more deeply and have an even greater impact than simply hosting families at our church, and to learn more about the systems and cycles that lead and keep people in poverty. This awareness, in turn, inspired us. It propelled us forward this past January to a training where nearly 40 church members, probably, I look out, some of you, gathered to learn and reflect on the cycles of poverty. And it was there that we learned about the One Village, One Family program. And someone raised their hand and said, hey, do we know about the One Village, One Family program? And said, could we start a village? And that's a group of four to six people who could companion a family as they move from homelessness into housing. Feeling the energy in the room that day, I could tell we'd have way more capacity than one village. I thought, probably three. So within a couple of months, with help from longtime church member Jim Smith and new member Ann Fisher, she doesn't like me to call her out, she is here today, we actually had, with their help, we actually had five villages worth of people committed to walking with families in this way, or maybe what we'd say now, wanting to simply be good neighbors. We call our villages a county. Since April, our county has received in-depth training, and three of those villages have been matched with families. The other two should have families probably within the next couple weeks. As a whole congregation, we have supported this ministry by raising about $9,000, money that goes to help with the initial costs of housing, with deposit, first and last month's rent, etc. I actually just got a note from the parent organization for One Village, One Family through the overall program. They can say with assurance 11 children now have homes that didn't previously have homes as a result of this walking together. Now, through it all, our villagers are hearing the stories of their families, getting to know them, feeling their frustrations and the crazy barriers to affordable housing that exist in our city. It has not always been easy. I know their hearts are being broken, sometimes in small and sometimes big ways. And it is from this breaking open and this risky yet real walking together, this good neighboring, that we in turn will learn where we as a congregation might go next, where we are propelled forward in our good neighboring. My friends, you know, religious and spiritual life only makes sense to me when it impacts our real lives, our everyday, with the real people we meet when we're walking down the street, I was actually just thinking as we were doing it, who might be the, if we did a Fort Collins version of that song, who might we feature today? For sure there has to be a freshman, CSU freshman, right? They have a little mini pool, like swimming pool and couch. Maybe some books. When we are better people, kinder, nicer, better listeners, and better neighbors as a result of our faith, that is when our faith really starts to matter. We don't need to do something about everything, but we can listen to our stories and we can do our part. These small things may not always make a great movie, but they do make for a great life, a better life for all the people in this big, beautiful neighborhood. Amen, and blessed be.